All right. Hey. Welcome to the Bear Fruit Show. Super excited to have you guys with our guest, Christian Barnes. Say hi, Christian.
How's everybody doing?
Awesome. Cool. So we're super excited about today. And we're talking about, I love talking about, you know, the failures and successes in people's lives, business, and just all around. And sometimes we talk about real estate. But today we're talking about fishing. And so I'm super excited about that. And so the whole point of the show is I had a mentor once tell me, hey, find someone with fruit on the tree and learn from them. And I feel like Christian has a wealth of knowledge and excited to learn from you a little bit. So
yeah, well, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. Awesome.
So tell me, let's do something fun. Let's run through some stuff real quick. First, tell people just a little bit about yourself and just a little background, not the whole story, but just a little toe in the water.
Yeah. My name's Christian Barnes. I've been living here in Durango now for almost 7 years. I moved here. I've sort of bounced around, but I'm originally from the state of Maryland, where I spent the first 18 years of my life. And just my personal background is I went to college at Auburn University in Alabama. And then, worked on Capitol Hill for 4 years as a congressional staffer.
I'm making sure the sound works.
After working on Capitol Hill, I worked in the government contracting industry for almost 10 plus years, and decided at that point that I no longer wanted to stay in that industry for a variety of reasons, which we don't need to get into, but I wanted to sort of pursue my own business and start creating something that I felt was more in tune with a lot of my personal beliefs and also a lot more of my personal passions. And so that's where I've shifted now to running my business, which I founded in 2020, which is Expedition Outside.
Expedition Outside. That sounds interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to kind of dive into that. So, but tell me a little bit about why you made, I mean, you don't have to go into all the details, but it seemed like you worked kind of like corporate America for a little bit.
I did. I worked the corporate grind. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And what made you finally say, hey, I'm done with this. This isn't for me. Like what, obviously there's some risk involved.
Well, I can point to a specific date. I mean, a specific moment where I knew where I saw corporate greed firsthand.
Yeah.
And, I'm not going to get into the specifics of the company or which company it involved, but basically, the owners, had decided that they were going to cut healthcare benefits to the employees. And I was a corporate officer at the time, so I was given knowledge of that we were going to roll this out to the employees and inform them of this at a certain point. And at the same time, the day that it was announced to the company, the one of the two owners arrived at the corporate headquarters in a brand new Ferrari.
Huh.
So that was my last taste of pure corporate greed at a high level.
Yeah.
And I decided that I had enough.
Yeah.
So
this wasn't for you.
And I began to plan my exit strategy, so to speak.
Nice.
You know, and, that's capitalism. Like they have every single right to do that. I'm not against that. You know, if somebody is an owner of a business, they have every right to spend their money however they see fit. But I just thought that it was, it was just a little bit of it was poor timing on their part. Let's just say,
yeah,
you know, maybe they could have had a little more class as far as
pulling
up in the branded Ferrari.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and that was the last time you said goodbye and you just decided to jump into,
well, I mean, it took a little time, and I left, at the time I was living in the South, working in the South. And then I had, discovered Durango in one way or another through some travel, both business and a personal travel, and really fell in love with the area. And then I moved up here and worked for a small business, helping them do some work with the government as well. And at that point, I came to sort of the conclusion of my contract working with them and took some time off, got married
Yeah.
to my, you know, to my fiance, then wife. And then we traveled for some time in Europe and just sort of reevaluated sort of where I wanted to be. And, you know, it took time and, you know, picked up odd jobs here and there and and doing a variety of things because I, at the time I wasn't in a tough financial position because I had saved my money well enough to where I had that buffer to where I could take a little bit of time off, but at the same time work on my own terms.
Sure. You and know? You weren't looking to just jump back into just anything.
Yeah. I needed time off. I was burned out, you know, I was burned out and I was, you know, and when you get burned out and you, and it starts to affect just, you know, how you interact with people, both, you know, at a professional level and also at a personal level, how it affects your mental health as well. And I just decided that I needed to take time off and go camping, go fishing, go hunting, and get away and just enjoy myself and sort of disconnect from that constant grind that, you know, from the day I graduated college in 2004 up until 2016, I had just been going at, you know, full bore 150%, you know, just, you know, always making sure focusing on work. And I needed time off.
Yeah. Do you feel like obviously during those years, you probably learned a lot, but was it, I mean, I guess kind of the answer to your, to my question is that it was just finally like you just overworked, wasn't treated right. And it was time to move on.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't that I wasn't treated right. You know, I mean, but you can learn, you know, you can learn a lot from, you know, fortunately at the early stages of my career, I had three incredible bosses, you know, the three first individuals I worked for coming out of college were incredible leaders. And I learned a ton from them. And then the next, two that I had were horrible leaders. Okay. But, you know, the amazing thing is you can learn just as much from those horrible leaders as you can from a great leader. Because you can learn from the great leaders what to do, and you can learn from the horrible leaders what not to do and how not to treat your people or your customers.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, sort of merging both of those together and then saying, okay, this is what, you know, so as it, you know, in some cases, it's not bad to have a horrible boss, you know, because you can,
you guys hear that?
I mean, it's true. You know, there are some reasons why having a horrible boss, you can learn some things because you then understand that's not the way to treat your people or that's not the way to treat your customer.
No, that's good. And I think for me, like, as I transitioned into being, you know, self-employed and running my own business, for me, it wasn't like I ever really had horrible people, but I just got tired of working so hard for somebody else. It was like, why don't I work this hard for myself?
Well, I think that's what a lot of people are sort of evaluating themselves, you know, in this sort of, you know, COVID/post-COVID world, right? Mm-hmm. Where, you know, they, in some cases, they were taken out of the workforce because, you know, their industries were shut down or whatnot, and they had time to sort of sit down at home, spend time with their families, maybe start thinking about their own passions, maybe even pursuing their own passions. And then they're reflecting back going, you know, why was I allowing my boss or this organization to treat me in such a poor manner? Yeah. And I tolerated it, you know, and in a lot of cases when I was working in, you know, corporate America, so to speak, at, you know, a large, not a Fortune 50 company, but a company that employed over 1,000 people.
Yeah.
All right. You know, I was pretty amazed at how hard you could whip people at times and they would come back for more, you know, because they were, you know, in a lot of cases they were reluctant to take that risk of branching out on their own because they want that security, and they'll sit there for 25, 30 years taking that whipping and not thinking that, you know, there may be another opportunity just around the corner where I could get treated better.
Yeah.
You know, and there's some individuals that like myself, like yourself, who at one point we just reflect back and we say, no, let's, what's the worst that can happen? All right. What, we fail?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you know, I mean, we live in the United States of America. Let's be honest with ourselves. I mean, I don't want to make this sound like a horrible thing, but you know, we don't walk down the street and we don't see the things that happen in third world countries, right? We don't see people starving to death on the street.
Yeah.
Okay. We see homelessness. We see people that have mental illnesses, and those are things that we have to address. But at the same time, nobody in the United States of America, I'm not going to say nobody, but the vast majority of people in the United States of America are not going to be able to survive.
Yeah. I mean, if you live in America, you're top 10% of the world.
Yes.
Probably you're like 5%.
You're very fortunate. Yeah. Okay. Extremely fortunate. Yeah. You know, with the opportunities that are handed ourselves, both just with the structure that we have put in place, with just the securities that we have in place, just geographically, if you want to even talk about that geographically. But, you know, even just the foundation of sort of the bedrock of our government and the Constitution,
yeah. Right?
And how that has led to security, you know, moving forward as a nation.
Mm-hmm.
So we're fortunate.
Yeah, definitely. I would say, like, what would you say to people, and I'll let you take a drink, but what would you say to people who have considered, you know, maybe going off on their own, but haven't made that jump yet? You know, maybe there's some fear involved, or they have that security of knowing like, hey, I'm going to work. I know I'm going to get paid this. You know, there's just so many unknowns when you kind of go off and pursue your dreams. But what would your...
Well, you have to know what stage in your life you're at, sure. Right? Okay. So, I mean, if you're a father of three, you know, and your wife doesn't work or something like that, she's a stay-at-home mother. You know, I can see how there's some hesitation to branch out because you do have to provide for your children and your wife and your families. You know, but, you know, if you're a younger individual, you know, and you don't necessarily have ties and deep roots in a family or even in a marriage, you can take risk. But at the same time, the entire time I've been building my business on the side, I've been doing side hustling,
sure,
to make a little bit of income.
Yeah.
All right. You know, just a little bit, you know, but I mean, you know, like after this interview, you know, I'm going and refereeing basketball.
Okay? Yeah.
That's not, I do it for a little bit of exercise and I enjoy it as well, but you know, it at least helps pay a little bit, pays my cell phone bill. Okay. and those things. And it helps out with the mortgage and stuff. So, you know, pursue, you know, have some type of basic financial plan in place to where, you know, you can take that risk and branch out, but you also are going to be able to still pay for your basic needs, you know, your groceries, your roof over your house or whatnot. And it may, you know, in some situations, it may force you to reduce some of your other expenses and some of the other things you enjoy doing. You may have to make those sacrifices, right?
Yeah.
You may have to cut down on your travel. You may have to cut down on your, you know, all the channels you have on cable TV and everything like that. You know, all those basic things. You may have to sell some of the items that you cherish or you know, some of the materialistic items just to help get by. But it's worth it because you're the failing is not a bad thing.
No.
Okay. Not trying is the bad thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
So I would rather fail and learn a heck of a lot on the way towards failure.
Mm-hmm.
Than I ever would just sitting there and going, you know, laying around on my deathbed one day,
yep,
and saying to myself, ah, you know, I should have moved to Colorado and I should have moved out west. I always wanted to go and live in the Rocky Mountains, right?
Yep.
You know, that was why I came to Durango, you know, or man, I should have tried doing something in an industry that I was really passionate about. Because I can always fall back.
Sure.
Right? You know, and most anybody can fall back if you're willing to work hard.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you're willing to work hard, you're always going to be able to find work.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it may not be the greatest work in the world, but, you know, you can swing a hammer. You can work for somebody else like that. You know, there's plenty of jobs out there. You can
plenty hustle. Plenty of jobs.
If you can hustle. Yeah. You can hustle.
No, absolutely. Yeah. No, I find that admirable that you were willing to, you know, take the risk to move out here and all the stuff, but obviously still working along the way.
Yeah.
You still are.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that says something a lot about you and why you've had success and why you're going to have great success.
Sure.
So, I think that's awesome. I think that's something a lot of people can walk away with.
Yeah. Don't be scared. You know, there's nothing to fear.
No,
you know, there really isn't. I mean,
cause you're going to learn a lot more by actually failing than you were to actually just have everything be hunky dory. And
absolutely. You know, absolutely. And I mean, I've had this discussion with my wife multiple times about the fact that, you know, there's so much that I've learned just by starting my own business and moving forward. And, you know, let's say in 4 to 5 years, it doesn't get to the size of magnitude that I want it to be, or maybe it fails completely, right? And, mm-hmm. and we become insolvent or something like that. I've still learned so much from just a financial standpoint, from a marketing standpoint, from a managing people standpoint, from treating customers correctly standpoint, that when you're in another part of an organization, or when you're managing people, you know, in another company working for somebody else, you're not directing the whole orchestra.
Yeah.
You're just one instrument in that orchestra.
Yep.
But when you're the conductor and you're the entrepreneur, you're having to run everything and get your hands involved in all the little nitty gritty stuff. And sometimes it's horrible, right? Because sometimes you don't want to have, I mean, sometimes you're having to, you know, send out emails or respond to customers at 1 a.m.
Yeah.
You know, when I get an email from somebody, you know, wanting to go fishing at 1 a.m. in the morning or something like that, you know, not, you know, they want to book a trip or something
like that.
Yeah, so yeah. I have to get up on my phone and I have to send out a permit or anything like that. It's difficult, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
You know, you just have to make those sacrifices. You just have to, I guess you have to stay at home a little bit more often.
You know? Yeah. You got to say no to other things because you're saying yes to your dreams.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know? So,
which is good. Which is good. So, all right, let's dive into some fun questions here real quick. As I open up my phone.
You want me to pull them up since you sent them to me?
Maybe. Gosh, my phone has been weird lately. All right, here they are. Cool. All right, so we'll do like a speed round, and then we'll jump into some other stuff. So, what's your favorite ice cream?
It's my favorite ice cream. Oh, it's got to be chocolate chip cookie dough.
All right.
Yeah, nice. Absolutely. All day long, Breyers.
All right.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
All right. What's your favorite show?
Television show?
Yeah. Are you guys watching anything right now?
Man, you know, it's as sad as it sounds, you know, if it's on, I'll watch The Office.
All right. Yes. Yeah, the original.
Yeah. I watched The Office.
There we go.
Yeah. That's probably like it. Yeah. I'll turn that on.
All right. Favorite sport?
You know, to play or to watch?
Now? Both. One of each.
You know, baseball.
Yeah.
Baseball.
To play or to watch?
Both.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, playoff baseball, and being at the ballpark. You know, okay. I love, you
yeah,
know,
yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I played baseball and football growing up and through high school and everything. But I'd say as I've gotten older, you know, my appreciation for baseball and just, you know, it being the American pastime.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, as much as I like football, the violence of it is sort of turning me off. You know,
yeah.
I don't like seeing the guys get injured anymore.
Yeah,
It's different. Yeah. I just, you know, I still like it and I still enjoy watching it. But I'd probably say baseball, and then and I like playing basketball.
All right.
You know, I'm not good. I'm not gonna say I'm good, but but I like playing it. You know, because you can get a good workout in, and you can play it. You can, you know, you can bang around and hit some guys and play it. You know, into your 40s and 50s.
It's true. It's true. All right. Favorite team.
Favorite team? Auburn University, man. Anything.
Auburn baseball,
Auburn football. That's it. I don't have any favorite pro teams, nothing. It's Auburn. You know, so I'm agnostic on pro teams. You know, I guess, I mean, pretty much I root for wherever, if I go to a professional game, sure. I root for the home team. That's it.
Home team, no matter what.
Yeah, always, always. So the last baseball game I was at, I went to a Diamondbacks game.
Diamondbacks.
Bought a Diamondbacks hat, rooted for the Diamondbacks.
I like it.
You know, so if I go to, you know, if I go to San Francisco or LA or, you know, the Yankees or something, yeah. I don't know if I'll root for the Yankees. I may be the only one I won't root
that's
for.
That's the only one.
Yeah, that's probably the one I won't root for.
Show up in the Boston hat, yeah, playing the Cubs.
Yeah, yeah. None of those New England teams, but anything else, it's home team. So
guessing, obviously, you went to Auburn.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, I went. Yeah, absolutely. Anything Auburn.
I like it.
Yeah. Women's softball, anything.
Cricket.
Yep. I don't know if we have a cricket team.
No, I was just joking. That's funny. What's your favorite food to make?
Fish.
Fish. What kind of fish?
I like to do – so it's hard to get here because obviously we're in the middle of the Rockies, but any type of ocean fish I really like to make. Like I have like a specialty. I do like a salt-baked whole fish.
Hmm.
So stuff the cavity with cilantro, garlic, lemon, and then you cover it in a mixture of salt. You cover the whole fish in a mixture of salt and egg yolk. And then you slowly roast that in the oven over a few hours, and it just absorbs all of that, and the fish stays whole, and you cook that, crack it open. And then also probably oysters, because I'm a Maryland boy, right? So Maryland's got crabs, oysters, crabs. Yeah. So anything from the sea.
All right.
Yeah. I'll crush it.
Nice. I'm going to have to try that. Yeah. That fish recipe. Yeah. Salt on salmon?
Salt bake. Yeah, salmon's pretty good, but you got to have a whole fish. Yeah. You can't just do like a fillet.
Yeah, it's
got
to be the whole fish.
Yeah, that whole fish.
And does it take obviously a little longer?
Or? Yeah, it takes a couple hours to slow roast it because you want to cook it low and slow.
I'm going to have to get you.
Absolutely.
Get that recipe.
Delicious.
All right. Where's the favorite place you and your wife have visited? Sounds like you guys did a little traveling.
The favorite place we've visited outside of the United States, Innsbruck, Austria is pretty beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've had two Winter Olympics there. It's right in the Alps. It's a beautiful place. Very similar to Durango, size wise, beautiful. And probably going back and traveling again. I love going to Spain. And I love going to Italy because I love the hospitality there.
Yeah.
I think the people are just extraordinarily wonderful people. Yeah. And then France as well because of the cooking.
Okay.
You know, the French just have great cuisine.
Hmm.
You know, so anywhere outside of Paris, you know, you get into the French countryside, it's really wonderful.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, nice. You're making me want to go. You're getting me hungry and wanting to travel.
Yeah, France is a nice place to go to.
Nice. All right. So let's jump into some a little longer stories. You like to hunt, you like to fish.
Mm-hmm.
What's your best hunting story?
My best hunting story? So I'm an archery hunter, you know, and I grew up as a young man in Maryland. And the reason why I got into archery originally was because gun season was only a week in Maryland when I was younger.
Wow.
So you only had a week long gun season, but archery season was 2.5 months. So I started archery hunting at a very young age, just in my backyard, right? Because it extended the season. So I've been archery hunting for well over 3/4 of my life almost. And I go out to Kansas because I have a friend who I'm a good farmer, a friend with is a farmer. He's a cattleman out there. And I went, probably 4 years ago out there by myself, traveled out there, stayed at his farmhouse. And on the last day, the last second, I shot with my bow a monster buck. I have him mounted and everything. But that's probably my best personal story. But as far as just enjoyment, as a little kid, you know, I'll always think back about just squirrel hunting with my father.
Yeah.
you know, and just going out in the woods and squirrel hunting together, and just sitting with my dad in the woods. And, you know, you don't, with squirrel hunting, you don't got to be terribly quiet. You don't have to, you know, you're just sitting in the woods, and, you know, it's sort of just fun to be sitting next to your dad as a young kid holding a gun. And if a squirrel comes out, you shoot him, and then you take him home and you cook him.
There you go.
You know?
Nice.
So, and squirrel's good.
I don't know if I've ever had squirrel.
Well, out west, we just have these pine squirrels that are tiny, you know, but the east, you know, you have those. Yeah, the east, they have, you know, larger gray squirrels. Yeah, so you can fry them up. You can grill them. You know, they're really, really, really tasty. you just got to do it right. It's like anything.
Yeah, that's true. They taste like chicken.
Yeah, they don't taste like chicken. I mean, it's been a while since I've had it, actually. But, yeah, I mean, you know, sitting down with my father and, you know, in the woods, you know, in Maryland, and the oaks and the hickories and things like that's nice, you know, during the fall when the weather's not brutally cold, but the foliage is out there. That's enjoyable.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Nice. What about fishing story? What's your best fishing story?
Best fishing story. When I was 9 years old, my father and I and mother we had spring break for school, we drove down to stay with my grandfather in Prattville, Alabama, which is a small suburb of Montgomery, Alabama, which is the capital. And we got to fish on a private pond owned by a family called the Musgroves. Very, very nice people. And my father and I fished there together, and I caught a monster 10-pound largemouth bass at age 9. I actually have it mounted. I still have it. So that's cool. Like one of my cherished possessions, you know? And so that's probably my best fishing story. And that's probably what
got me
hooked for the rest of my life. You know?
Yeah.
And again, it was something I got to do with my father, you know, who's still alive, you know, but it was something I got to do with my father. And it's just, you know, one of those cool moments where you catch a gigantic once in a lifetime fish at such a young age.
Yeah.
You know, so
that's awesome.
Yeah. That's awesome. But I've also had great times fishing with friends here and stuff like that. And, you know, just, you know, I mean, anything, you know, you make a great cast and you catch a fish and you just know right when you cast it, right where you put it, that a fish is going
to eat it.
Is going to eat that,
yeah.
You know, and you catch it and then you release it back. And it's just, that's a good experience too.
Yeah.
You know,
Nice. Well, tell me a little bit about your story, about like your story of you started a little bit, but let's pick back up and on your business and just your story of life.
So. Yeah. So, you know, as far as the business itself, when I was sort of transitioning from working, you know, for other people and coming up with business concepts, one of the first things I had sort of pursued was I was trying to come up with a concept to help people manage their applications for big game tags every year. And because I felt that, because me personally, I had missed applying 1 year for a tag because I just wasn't paying attention and the deadline had slipped and thus I wasn't able to apply. So I didn't get a tag for a deer that year. And I started thinking about, well, there should be some type of automated system that somebody could put in place. Well, so I started pursuing that and realized that, you know, one, there were already a couple companies already doing that. They were doing a pretty good job of doing that. So that wasn't necessarily my niche. But I started realizing, particularly when it came to fishing, that what really is important is getting access to exclusive locations that the general public can't get access to.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as much as Colorado in the West is blessed with a bounty of public lands, you know, a lot of people back east in particular, which is where I grew up, everything's private.
Yeah.
And so you have to have permission from the property owners themselves. And a lot of times that permission comes from a personal nature or you own it yourself.
Yeah.
Right. So I started thinking a little bit more deeply about it and started, you know, coming up with the concept of, well, wait a second now, Airbnb has this gigantic model that they built up to where people are literally renting out their homes and their beds. Okay. People are sleeping in their master bedrooms, right? You know, so why wouldn't a landowner be willing to allow somebody to get that was a good steward of the land to come down and fish for the day and pay them?
Yeah.
And just create that marketplace, right? So it's a win-win for both parties because the landowner is getting some type of financial incentive to allow access down there. And at the same time, the anglers are getting private access to waters where they don't have to worry about overcrowding. They don't have to worry about too much pressure on the fish. They can just sort of go out there and enjoy the outdoors to themselves or with their friend or family member, you know, as one, you know, and that's where things really started getting rolling at that point. And that's when I really started focusing it on, you know, let's create that marketplace where we can bring those two parties together. Whereas opposed in the old days, you would just go knocking on somebody's door. Right. Yeah. You know, and that just doesn't, you know, that doesn't work in this day and age anymore.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately.
No, it doesn't. So you created basically an Airbnb platform for fishing.
I created an Airbnb platform for private land access.
Private land access.
Yeah, okay. Correct. Because there are some other things that we do provide as well that people can do on private properties, such as camping and things like that, if they want to get away from the crowds. And we're starting to pursue some other activities that I don't, you know, that are outside of the fishing norm, but fishing, fly fishing, catch and release is our bedrock.
Yeah.
You know, that's the focus.
Yeah.
You know, because individuals can come in, you know, and they basically have that body of water private to themselves from sunrise to sunset.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Nice. That's awesome. And it gives, just gives that experience for that person to be able to go out and not have to worry about, like you said, all the other people around them, and they can just go and relax.
Yeah. And, you know, and a lot of anglers are self-conscious too, right? You know, and they, particularly individuals who are looking to get into the sport, they, when they go out on, you know, crowded waters, you know, and they're starting their first time fishing or whatever, and they don't really look like they don't look good, or they're not catching fish while the guy right next to them's catching fish, they're a little self-conscious like most human beings, right? So giving them the opportunity to go out there and just focus on focus on themselves, right? Don't worry about the outside noise. Just sit down and relax in Mother Nature and enjoy yourself and just do what you want to do. You know, and don't worry about, you know, Jim or Frank that's fishing next to you and catching all these fish and giggling at you because you can't cast very well or whatever else. You know, so, and there are a lot of cases like that where people just want to go out there with their, you know, a son and a father want to fish together, or at the same time, a very experienced angler wants to go try some different water that has maybe a trout that has never been caught, you know, in it, as opposed to the public water systems that have, you know, been fished thousands upon thousands of times by anglers.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of our properties, these properties get fished at a maximum, you know, at a maximum, you know, 50 to 60 times a year.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So we definitely want to, we want to minimize it because that adds the value to
it. Sure. Yeah, it definitely is. It's like getting something you can't really get anywhere else.
It's that exclusivity, but it's also, you know, knowing that you're going down there and you're going to have a good experience.
Yeah.
You know,
Nice. So it's creating that experience, you know, in a place where you can't get access to.
Yeah, exactly. We're in the experience business.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just about people being able to go out there and really enjoy themselves and, you know, in beautiful parts of Colorado and beautiful parts of the West. And, you know, hopefully as we continue to grow, we'll be able to move to new locations like in the Southeast and then, you know, in the East where it's harder and harder to find, but you know, it's harder and harder to find access.
Yeah.
To,
so it's almost like
participate.
The model would work even better over there.
Potentially, you know, but you know, right now we want to focus on Colorado because Colorado does have such high quality, good fly fishing.
Yeah. Nice. Well, so tell me, what's kind of the, so you kind of tell me how you came up with it and what it is, where are you guys kind of going with it?
Like what's, so we're expanding, yeah. You know, right now, we've hired, so we've, you know, definitely acquired a number of properties here in the southwest corner of the state of Colorado. And now we want to march further forward north along the entire western slope.
Okay.
So we want to have the entire western slope covered within the next 2 years.
Cool.
To where we are the premier provider of private land access for fly fishermen and women,
okay.
along the western slope.
Nice.
Yeah. And then from there, we want to branch out to other states in the, you know, Rocky Mountain region. So, you know, northern parts of New Mexico, northern mm-hmm. parts of Arizona, parts of Utah, and then into Wyoming as well.
Into Wyoming. Mm-hmm. Okay. Nice. Awesome. So what else should we know about your company?
You know, you know, we're in the business there, you know, there's been individuals who have sort of complained about the fact that, you know, they think we're locking down properties.
Giving them a key.
Yeah. We're expanding the opportunities for areas for people to fish
yeah.
that otherwise they couldn't get access to. Right.
Yeah.
Because what is the incentive for a property owner in this day and age to allow somebody to come down there and fish on their properties with liabilities and all this other thing, right? So these property owners, we provide the liability for them. We set the rules and regulations in place for them. You know, we abide by, you know, everybody has to abide by the state, you know, Colorado Parks and Wildlife laws. So they have to have their licenses and they have to have all that in turn, you know, and we also can work hand in hand with guide services, because if individuals do request guides, you know, guides can work through us to take individuals out on these private properties. So it's growing the pie.
Hmm.
It's not cutting my half.
Cutting it out.
It's not cutting yeah. half of it off and taking it away.
No.
So we really want to expand the size of the sport, you know, and the access. Because look, yeah, we do have tons and tons of public access around here. However, with that being said, more and more people are getting outside. There's more and more traffic in the great outdoors, you know, on public lands. So we need to reduce that footprint. And by creating that marketplace, you know, on private properties, we're enabling individuals to get out there and decreasing what the pressures are being put on the on the public lands,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know.
Plus, there's something to be said about someone being able to go somewhere where there's going to be no one else.
Mm-hmm. Like, absolutely.
Like, that's attractive to me to be able to go and, like, take a client out or take a friend out and be like, hey, let's go fish this water. Like, no one else is going to be
yeah,
here.
Yeah, it's just going to be us. Yeah, we're just going to hang out. You know,
yeah.
And people are always looking for that, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, who wouldn't want Disney? You know, who wouldn't want Disneyland to themselves for the day?
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
You know, you get all the rides and everything without the lines.
Yep.
You know, so it's the same type of thing. Or, you know, who wouldn't want to have the Grand Canyon to themselves, you know, for a whole day? I mean,
yeah.
well, you can never cover the entire Grand Canyon, you know.
No,
you,
but I get what you're saying.
You
yeah.
need a year to cover all that. But it's giving back, really, mm-hmm. more than anything. And it's adding to conservation, because instead of these landowners in a lot of cases that are facing pressures to potentially sell or to develop because they need the income streams,
yeah,
right, we're providing an income stream back to the landowner. So you're not going to see a bunch of homes
going
or developments
there.
Get built on a 260-acre property. It's going to stay in a conservation type of situation, to where it's going to be a good habitat for all other types of wildlife as well, not just trout, but
yeah.
you know, fish, ducks, birds, all these things.
Yeah.
Sorry.
There
it's a customer calling.
Of course.
I'll get back to him from Minnesota. Oh, there you go. So,
yeah, no, that's awesome. And I think you're exactly right. You get Disneyland.
Yeah. Like, exactly. You get all the rides, man. Space Mountain, no line. Yeah. You know? Right.
Nice. No, that's awesome. I think that's definitely something to be said. Cool. So let's hop through a couple of these other questions in here.
All right. Yeah, I got a basketball game.
I know. We got to get going on these, so we'll be done here. So first question is, you know, what is the purpose of life and how did you find it?
So, you know, when I was 35 years old, I was diagnosed with a neurological disorder. Okay. And that was sort of shocked to me because, you know, at that stage in your life, I never had any type of physical ailment or, you know, mental ailment or anything like that. And so once you're sort of challenged with that, it took me a few years to overcome that disability, let's say. And I still have that disability, but, you know, it was a shock to my system, you know, and I think that what it really made me start to think about was the purpose of life is one, you can't take anything for granted because, you know, you want to live day to day and really get out there and enjoy the moment in the moment. Right.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you want to be able to look forward and try to leave something that you want to leave things in a better condition than they were before you left.
Yeah.
So you want to improve, you know, you want to improve society. You want to improve how people communicate with each other. You want to improve the habitat and the ecosystem, things like that. So I think, you know, the purpose of life is one, enjoying the moment and spending time with your loved ones. But at the other time, you want to improve what the next generation's opportunities are.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a key aspect. You don't want to constantly take.
Yeah.
You know, you want to give.
Yeah.
You know, and you want to be able to, when you do exit this life, you want to be able to at least have people acknowledge the fact that you in some capacity were able to give more than you took away.
Yeah. That's powerful.
And I think that's key.
Yeah, that's powerful. So at such a young age, at, you know, 35, you're diagnosed with a disease, and epilepsy.
Epilepsy. You can say it. Epilepsy. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I mean, still, like, you're young and active, and just
changed
a lot of things.
Sure. Yeah, it did. Yeah, absolutely. So it's tough, but, you know, it's like anything. I mean, you just sort of have to, and it did take some time. You know, I mean, going through, you know, bouts of depression and things like that. And, you know, also, I mean, I had just gotten married.
Yeah.
Right. So also my wife, you know, it's like, oh, great. I mean, you know,
hey, honey.
Like, hey, look at that. I mean, you know, like, I think we were like 6 months married. It's like, great. You know, so having to go through that, but, you know, I mean, that's obviously,
well, that's also making you guys stronger.
Well, that's also why you want to make sure you marry the right person.
Yeah. That's true. Okay. Found that real quick.
Yeah. You know, But you have to, and my wife's wonderful. So Amanda, love you. That's key. So yeah, you know, everybody, and you never know. And the one thing too, which I sort of look back on it is, I think it's actually made me a better person because I was a little bit quick to judge people prior to, and now I, you know, sort of sit back and you never really know somebody's story. You don't really know what's going on. You know, you can see their behavior and sometimes you can't quite understand why they may be behaving that way, but you don't know what
they've been through.
Yeah. What trauma they may have been through, you know, what, you know, stresses they have, whether, I mean, you know, they're raising kids or, you know, they're having marital troubles or works really hard or, you know, they're in financial trouble. I mean, or there's even worse things like that. You know, they have chemical dependencies and things like that. So, you know, I've definitely improved the way of looking and saying, you know what, I'm not going to rush to judge here. You know, I'm going to sit back and try to understand what they're going through as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and also, you know, in turn, try to explain to them, look, you know, I've gone through some tough things as well.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not the, you know, this isn't the end of the road.
Yeah.
You know, don't give up. You can pull out of this.
Yeah.
Whatever situation you may be in.
Well, it just helps you be able to relate to them and be like, hey,
yeah,
you know, I've gone through hard times too.
And, sure. Absolutely.
You know, here I am. And, you know, yeah, especially the younger folks.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, who may have struggled with depression or whatever's, you know, whatever's going on.
It's hard. Yeah. Life is not easy.
No,
it's not. I don't care who you are.
Yeah.
It is not an easy thing. I mean, so you have to, you know, and everybody goes through their own personal struggles. So you have to, you know, yet you have to be understanding of, you know, at certain times people are going to be in certain they're going to be in certain stages of their lives. You know, you just have to encourage them to continue to push through, because there is a silver lining at the end of the tunnel, so to speak, or there's light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
You know, in all honesty. So you just can't give up.
Yeah,
it's not going to be perfect. I mean, no. You know, maybe I mean, all right. So we don't become millionaires. So what?
Yeah. So
I got, we got a roof over our heads. Yeah. You know, we got food in the fridge.
Yeah.
You know, we got loved ones.
Yeah.
You know, you have a nice family. Yeah. You know, it's so, and so you really have to appreciate what you got. Even if you just got a cool dog.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's something.
Well, at least you got a cool dog.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, right? It's helping you be more optimistic on life versus just like looking at all the bad things, because it's easy to see the bad things.
Right? Yeah. I mean, and this day and age too, I mean, particularly with the social media and stuff, it's just such a constant bombardment of negativity, and it really, you know, you have to pull yourself away from it, and you have to unplug.
Yeah.
You have to be willing to take time to
That's unplug. Good.
You have to be willing to take time to unplug yourself and get away from the noise.
Yeah. Yeah.
And reflect. And whether that's doing, you know, whether that's through exercise, meditation, you know, activities at church, you know, volunteering, you know, you have to do something to unplug from your, you know, your normal, your everyday struggles.
Yeah.
It's my wife. Let me text her real quick.
Well, I mean, I think it says something too, to be able to step away and be able to get away. Like me and my wife last month have really tried to take like a Sabbath, like a day where it's like, hey, our phones are going off. They're going in the closet.
Absolutely.
We're getting in the mountains. We're doing whatever. We're just getting away. And there's something like healthy about that.
Sure.
That
sure.
Just a lot of people don't know how to unplug.
Yeah.
They don't know how to truly rest.
Yeah. And I mean, I I've lived the urban lifestyle, right?
Yeah.
I lived on Capitol Hill for 5 years. Okay.
I was in the
middle of it, but you know, at the same time, I would find neighborhoods, and I would find, you know, the museums and things like that, and going onto the National Mall and things like that, and going
just
for a job
away,
to, you know, just to unplug it. Right. You know, even with the stresses and stuff like that, you have to find those outlets.
Agreed. All right. Let's hop into this next one. What is the most difficult decision you've had to make to pursue your destiny?
To pursue my destiny, I mean,
maybe just pursue your dream. Let's say that.
I mean, the most difficult decision every time I look in my personal bank account. I mean, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's pretty much it, because I'm not collecting any type of salary or anything.
Yeah.
I'm paying all my
employees.
It's all going
back into the business.
Yeah, it's all going back into the business. So, you know, that's probably the most difficult decision, you know, because it wasn't difficult for me to say, I want to go do this.
No,
you know, it's probably more difficult as far and, you know, and also, having to, you know, living in an area like Durango where there's so much cool stuff to do, you know, and here's a difficult decision. I mean, there's much worse decisions to make that people have to make, but here's a difficult decision. I didn't hunt this fall because I had to work all month.
That's a difficult decision.
That's a difficult decision, right?
Especially if
I had to sacrifice a whole month of elk hunting because I was working. So there's a difficult decision.
That's
a tough one.
No, for some people, that people would never do that.
Yeah, exactly. I had to give it up. I couldn't go in the mountains for for my week.
When do you feel God's presence most?
I mean, for me personally, it's when I'm, it's when I'm spending time, out in the woods, either with a very close friend, and we're just speaking about the beauty of Mother Nature, you know, and the fact that there had to, there has to be some type of overwhelming power to this.
Yeah.
Correct. You know, and it can be in situations where, at least for me personally, it's more when I'm outside, when I'm in the outdoors, you know, where I'm under the night stars late at night, or I'm hiking on a trail up in the mountains by myself. That's really where I feel that there's a another voice sort of speaking to me, guiding me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not so much a person. I mean, like I read, you know, like right now I'm reading the Quran, you know, out of curiosity and things like that. And obviously, you know, having read the Bible and things like that, but, you know, feeling that higher presence, I think is more when you either it's two things. It's either looking at the beauty of Mother Nature, or in some cases it can be looking at the beauty of human creation, like artwork.
Yeah.
You know, like if, you know, and that goes back to like when I was living in DC and things, when they would have traveling art exhibits and going and actually seeing some of these masterpieces that these, you know, artists have created, and looking at them and just seeing the beauty of that. And it, knowing that there had to have been some type of guidance on that, you know, because there's, you know, think about how fortunate we are. You know, like what are the percentages, if you really think about it, that you and I exist? I mean, our parents had to create us, and their parents had to create them, and their parents' parents had to create them. I mean, and it goes back 150,000 years. So just for the bare odds that you and I exist and our form is crazy. You know, I mean, there could have been somebody similar to you, right, that your parents may have had, but not you. But only, for you, you know, the odds are just, I mean, you know, one in, you know, 500 trillion for all we know. You know, more the odds are greater than the stars in the sky, probably. Now, some, you know, person, some astronomer is going to tell me I'm wrong or something on the video, but, you know, that, I mean, so that's pretty overwhelming.
No, it is. When you start to think about, like, wow, like, to think about how we're even just created. And then you look, even talking about creation, like someone's painting, like, I also think like we were created to create.
Absolutely.
And so there's something to be said about that, whether it's that or, you know, business wise or whatever it is. You know, there's something to that. And it's hard to think like, wow.
And that's the unique thing about human beings. You know, I mean, we can create
stuff,
you know, we have that capability, you know, and we can create things for horrible reasons. You know, I mean, which is sad, you know, but at the same time, I mean, there's more stuff that's been created out of pure beauty than for horrible things.
And I heard this and it made me think of it. You were saying like there's it's such a unique chance that you are you.
Exactly.
Like that's crazy to think about that. Like there's only one of you and there's only going to be one of you ever. So to think
and
about
just the odds that that I got created. You know, because there could have been a, you know, there could have been a Christian similar, but maybe he has, you know, I don't know, like dark brown eyes or, you know, or bigger ears or something like that, you know, just, you know, or a big, I don't know, you know, missing teeth. I don't know. Who knows?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just there's only one of you. And I think there's the same like all of us have a destiny or a dream and. I think it's a shame when people don't go after their dreams. Because that when that dream, when they die, potentially that dream that they had dies with them. That's kind of the scary thing to think about. Like, hey, when you're on your deathbed, like when you said no to the things that you felt like you were supposed to go do in life, like that dream died with you.
It's gone.
And so
And nobody will know what it really was.
Yeah.
Unless you communicated it, but that sure. doesn't mean somebody else is going to pursue it on That's your not behalf. Their dream. Yeah. yeah. You know?
Yeah.
So.
Last question. What would you tell your younger self if you had to give him some tips?
What would I tell my younger self? Like in my 20s?
Yeah, because you're still pretty young.
Be nicer to people. Yeah. you know, I mean, don't be so focused on, trying to get ahead. You know, have a little more patience.
Hmm.
You know, because when you're young and ambitious, you want to just drive forward and, like, run people over and, you know, damn the torpedoes, full steam ahead type of idea.
Hmm.
And I think in a lot of cases, I was so self-absorbed that I didn't take a second to reflect back and think that, you know, maybe your behavior or maybe the way you're treating people is not truly reflective of what's inside of yourself. Because I was just, you know,
you're so focused on your what you wanted to accomplish.
So focused on trying to get ahead.
Yeah.
You know, in the race at the time, you know, that would be it, you know, and maybe get some more sleep.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Get a little more sleep at nights.
Yeah.
You know? In my 20s.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you're speaking to me because, I mean, I'm 30, but yeah, I feel like I've been doing that a little bit lately.
Yeah.
So I probably need to listen
sleep
up.
A little more.
Sleep a little bit more.
Yeah, get some sleep.
Chill out a little
bit. Get your 8 hours. Get your 8 hours.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's good.
It's your 8 hours of sleep, man.
So if there's anything I didn't ask you or anything you'd like to share.
No, just, I mean, you know, if, I mean, you know, reach out to me. I mean, if anybody knows anybody that's interested in fly fishing out west or getting on private land or wants to just talk business with me, I'm more than happy to.
Yeah. So if someone wanted to get a hold of you, what would be the best way?
They can call my cell phone.
All right.
202-577-4498. And they can email me at christian@expeditionoutside.com.
Nice.
But yeah.
And your website is?
Expeditionoutside.com.
Yep.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So they can get a hold of me anytime. And I'll get back with them as soon as I can. Just like whoever called me from Minnesota, I'll call them in a second.
Awesome. All right.
Thanks,
appreciate
brother.
It.
Yeah. It's a good time talking to you, man.
It was good.
Best of luck.
Absolutely.
Peace.
Peace out.
Peace. There you go.
Here we are. All right, I'm done.